Here we are, back for episodes 11.
I love rock and roll. Put another dime in the jukebox, baby.
I forgot
that song
what
makes
11
me think
was.
About Britney Spears.
Oh, she did do that.
Yeah, she did.
I wonder if Britney Spears likes true crime.
Oh, should we like send her a link on her Instagram?
Maybe she'll shout us out.
Insta. I know.
She stay
her
on
crazy
Insta.
TikTok post us. Oh yeah, she got naked on there the other day. Did you see that one?
She be showing her TikToks a lot.
All of it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, there's a booger falling out of my nose, and there's no tissues in here. I'm trapped. Oh my god.
Free Brittany and free Ashley.
Oh my god, I'm
free
so sorry.
Free the booger.
Oh, so gross. Oh, ah!
Free the booger.
I'm Ashley, the allergy-infested teacher.
I'm Brooke, who's never had allergies in her life.
And you're here with us on Teachers Who Talk Crime
Podcast.
Yay, yay, we're back again. Episode 11? 11.
It is 11. Yes.
Once in Spanish?
So that officially means that we have passed the stereotype that I mentioned in our happy hour episode on episode 5.
Oh my
not
God.
The stereotype, not the stereotype, the statistic. What am I talking about? The statistic that we would not surpass episode 10, and here we are sitting at 11, baby.
Yup, sitting on top of the world, top of the world, top of the world. And
we
like,
will be back together soon, too.
Yeah, you got to book that flight because I can't do this like this.
I know.
I can't. This is ghetto. I don't like it. So if anyone out
quality.
There... I mean, our quality's good. It's just like, I feel like our sounds are a little delayed because of the interweb, and there's a huge storm going on over here, and there's like tornadoes over there, and it's just like weather issues everywhere.
Oh my gosh, y'all. I was texting Ashley yesterday, and I got, like, I was on my way to the gym, and I texted her, and I was like, so I think I'm going to go home because I think that a tornado is about to take me in my life. And then there would be no more Teachers Talk Crime because the tornado has me. I am to the tornado now.
And there would be no way I would do this by myself. So thank you for going home and not getting taken away like Toto and Dorothy.
Exactly. I actually pulled into a gas station and just sat there and like watched it hail and like rain. And then when I felt safe, I was like, okay, I'm going to try this now. Came home. Let the storm pass, and then I went and praised some Jesus.
Praise him. Because won't he do it?
Yes. Yeah.
Yes.
That was my church voice, I guess.
That was good. Oh, I like that. I like that. I liked it a lot. Yeah. Picasso. So our socials, because, you know, you got to follow us. You got to know who we are. So we have an Instagram that's like kind of blowing up a little bit.
From when we got on here and said something about 60 something followers.
And now we can say we have almost 400.
We do. Almost 400. 1 month old. We're getting old. We're getting old. Our podcast is getting old.
And if you guys haven't guessed, like, we record our episodes in advance, so this is our anniversary today, but you guys are going to get it in, like, 2 weeks, because this is what we have to do. We're teachers, we talk crime, and we have a lot of things on our plate, so this is what we got to do.
But you guys get it, and I feel like y'all have been nothing but, like, kind to us and loved us through the journey, and we are so thankful. We've said it on our socials, and we will say it again, but thank you, thank you, thank you. It's been so fun. I love it.
And if you don't follow us,
it will continue to be fun.
It will. It'll be so much fun because it's us and we're fun and you guys like us because we're fun. So, sounds like a win-win to me.
Yeah.
But our Instagram, is Teachers Talk Crime.
And our TikToks are our personal TikToks minus southern.math.teacher.
And y'all already know what it is. It's Brandy. That is Brant with three Y's. Three Y's. Why did I say that like that? I didn't know. Three Y's because of my allergies. Three Y's and an underscore.
Don't forget the underscore.
Because that's somewhat AB.
Yep. Exactly. And then we have a buy me a coffee, and I have officially switched over, guys. You are so going to be so proud of me. I am officially a Silver Linings girl. I have been making my own teas for like 2 weeks now, and I am loving it. And I am actually trying the Teacher's Talk Crime one tomorrow morning. But obviously, when y'all hear this, I probably have been drinking it every day for 2 weeks by now. But we do have a Buy Me a Coffee. It's buymeacoffee.com/TTC podcast. If you would like to sponsor our love for loaded teas and help us buy the ingredients to get our caffeine going in the morning.
Yeah, because it's necessary.
Yes. And we also have a Twitter. This is the first time we've mentioned our Twitter, but we do have a Twitter, and it is TTC podcast underscore.
But... Oh, yeah. Guys, this is a really big thing because we've been getting reviews on Apple Podcasts.
We have.
And it's so great. Our current rating is 4.9.
Because we got one star that we can't figure out who it was.
We got one star, and they didn't even tell us why they gave us a one star. So if you're listening, one star, why'd you give it to us? Because we want to know.
Yeah, we want to know.
Yeah, we curious because... If there's something we can improve, we would love to do it. But you didn't give us constructive criticism so we could fix it. So.
Yeah, that's true.
So.
Do we have a star student this week?
We do have a star student. Yes, we do. And our star student this week is Free Thinker Truth Speaker.
Hey, I see you, Free Thinker Truth Speaker. You can make a laugh out of that. I know you could.
I probably could, but right now I have to use all my energy to focus on this because my allergies just have my brain a little cloudy.
They're winning.
They titled their review, Keep It Up, in all caps.
Ooh.
And they gave us a 5-star rating. And what Free Thinker Truth Speaker said was, I usually only rate the podcast. I feel like I should write a review for this for the first time. I love that y'all decided to do a podcast. I've listened to other true crime podcasts. So far, I like y'all's the best.
Oh my God. That's a bold statement. That is a bold statement.
Thank you so much. I love how y'all give the facts, but also share y'all opinions. I find y'all do a good job at stating when facts are unclear in the case. I look forward to showing up for class each week.
Well, you are welcome in the classroom anytime.
Anytime. You know, we'll be here every Monday and every full moon.
Full moon.
Yep. So, Free Thinker. I can't even talk. Blah, blah, blah. What is happening? Thank goodness this is not my episode. You guys would be shame on Branty. But Free Thinker, Truth Speaker, thank you so much for your review. This gold star's for you. Bing.
Yeah.
Yeah, we did that. I promise it'll sound better when I'm not as nasaled.
And we will have another star student next week, but you hold that title, Free Thinker, Free Speaker.
Yes, Free Thinker, Truth Speaker.
Truth Speaker, you hold that title. You have the crown for the week.
Yeah, you got the crown for the week, Free Thinker, yes. Truth Speaker. Yeah.
It's like the line leader for the week, you know, how the kids
Oh my gosh, yes.
Yeah.
They fight over that job.
They do. I know. They still fight over in eighth grade, and there are no lines to be led.
That's interesting.
I'm going out the room first. No, I'm going out the room first.
That sounds like Skylar and Arya currently. Everything is, I want to be first. I want to be first. And I'm like, look, I'm going to go first, all right, because I ain't got time. I'll do that. But Brooke, this is you.
It is me. It is me.
And thank goodness.
I have consulted on this case. Oh, okay. I've talked to you about it. I've talked to Taylor from Creeps and Crimes about it. I have talked to a rando guy at the gym about it. Yeah. I was like, you know, what do you think about this? Can I get your opinion? And he's like, what's a podcast?
Oh.
Not really, but you know, he didn't care that I was asking his opinion.
Oh, wow.
It's got me pulled. It's kind of like your Tia Wimberly case when you understood that she was wrong, but it's like the events that led you there. We sympathized a little bit.
Okay. You know?
So yeah. So I'm
excited.
I know. I want to hear your thoughts. I want to have a discussion about this. I really want to even put this on our story to like ask like a very important question. You'll see what it is later. But until then, sit down. Shut up. The murder is about to begin.
Yeah.
Pardon the interruptions. Teachers Talk Crime would like to disclose that some of the things discussed on this podcast are their opinions. Ashley and Brooke are not pointing the blame on anyone. They are just two teachers with a microphone. Thank you. And away we go!
So today's case is about Christopher Pittman. I'm going to start with just a generic summary of what happened and because it needs to be said. So Christopher Pittman said that he remembered everything about the night in late 2001 when he killed his grandparents. He remembers the blood, the shotgun blast, the voices urging him on, even the smoke detectors that screamed as he drove away from the rural South Carolina home after setting it on fire. He now claims, although he does remember, it seems as though it was just a dream and not reality. So let me tell you how we got here and what kind of happened to get that quote from him and see his standpoint on things. So Christopher Frank Pittman was born April 9th, 1989 in Huntsville, Alabama.
Oh, not in Alabama.
You know, we just had an Alabama case. Now we back in it.
Yeah. Maybe I don't need to come there no more.
So I had no idea we were producing all these cases out here, but the case actually did not happen in Alabama. So that's just where he was born. So Christopher was convicted in 2005 for murdering his grandparents at the age of 12. And this case drew national attention for two reasons. One, because of Pittman's age, but the main reason that this case drew national attention worldwide, I mean, not worldwide, but nationwide, was because of his defense. His defense went to trial stating that the prescription drug Zoloft, an antidepressant, caused him to act in this manner.
Isn't Zoloft supposed to make you, like, not depressed?
It is, but have you, so personally, and we're going to get into all the details about Zoloft, it is an antidepressant. So, yes, its goal is to make you not depressed.
But it could, I guess, make you super more depressed?
Yeah, not super more depressed, but manic is the word they like to throw around.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. Okay. All right, Pittman.
There's some interesting details about this.
Well, go ahead. I'm ready. I'm here.
Yeah. So his grandparents were a staple piece in Christopher's life. Christopher did not come from rainbows and butterflies. His mother had ran out on their family twice. Once when Christopher was, extremely young. I would probably say your kid's age or younger. That's like how young he was. And then again at age 11.
And they would definitely remember that because my kids are like, where you at, mommy? Where you at? Yeah. So he would remember that.
Exactly. But just to show the age gap between her leaving the first time and then the second time at age 11. So what happened was she returned to the family to date Christopher's dad. It obviously didn't work the millionth times they had tried it before. It clearly didn't work again. So the family's back together at age 11. Christopher's age 11. His mom comes back. Only a few months later, she literally up and abandons them again. Gone. Disappeared.
That's horrible. And to have that done to you two times, like, yikes.
Right. And his father was allegedly frequently abusive. Now, he goes on interviews now and says otherwise, and he's done this in multiple interviews. But both of his kids, his daughter and his son Christopher, say that he made a paddle and would consistently or frequently use it on them. He claims, yes, I did make a paddle, but it was only a scare tactic and I never used it on the kids, just threatened them with it.
Okay, why are you scaring kids with a paddle? Regardless if you use it or not, like, there's so many other things you could do to, I don't want to say instill fear, but to get your point across. Is that the word that, is that the phrase that I'm thinking of?
Yeah, I would say that too, but also he's acting like he's doing that thing that people do with half-truths. Like, I'm not going to deny that I had a paddle, but I didn't actually use it on it. You know, like,
yeah,
he half-truthed it.
And then why would both of your kids lie about it? Like, the both of them. What do you think they got in cahoots and were like, we're going to lie on dad? Like, no one's going to do that.
Right.
I mean, people do it, but like, eh.
Yeah. So, needless to say, his grandparents were a staple in his eye. Like, they were a stable home. They were stable in church. They were just stable. And they were his sense of normalcy. So Christopher's dad was also going through his third divorce.
Oh, wow.
And was constantly uprooting his kids and sending them to live with Joe and Joy. That is his grandparents, paternal grandparents.
Oh, okay. I mean, I've been through a divorce once. I don't want that thing again. So third time is not a charm for that man, okay?
So this is just the three. This is just the people he's married. This is not even talking about probably the women that he's brought in and dated and didn't marry, you know? So while he was trying to get his life together, he sent the kids to live with Joe and Joy. He would bring the kids back, have some sort of a normal family, and then that wouldn't last long and he would send them back. So the kids were used to this, like, back and forth between paternal grandparents, Joe and Joy, and their dad's house. Literally uprooting them every few months and just sending them back and forth.
And that's so chaotic, like, to never know, like, all right, things are going good, and then to just uproot them and be like, oh, just kidding, we're a family, just kidding, she broke my heart, go back to your grandparents, just kidding, I got a new girl, she lit. Like, that's
a lot.
And
we in love.
Like, that's a lot for a child to go through multiple times.
And you're right. And, like, what is it telling the child? What's wrong with me? Why does dad keep sending me away? Like, why can't he, like, what is wrong with me? Because everything, you know, to children at that age is blaming themselves.
Oh, absolutely. One of the cases I'm working on now was, like, he was saying that to himself. Like, why aren't I good enough? You know what I mean? So that's sad. Kids should never have to wonder why they're not good enough.
Exactly. I agree. So after Christopher's mom left the second time, around 11 to 12 years old, he could have been 11 and a half or he could have already been 12. It's not very, you know, clear. Christopher was put on Paxil, also a antidepressant drug. This was for mild depression, so he was taking a very light dose of Paxil at the time. And this was obviously caused by the many factors that we just talked about, the uprooting, the back and forth, this woman's in my life, this woman's now out of my life, my mom's in my life, my mom's out of my life, etc. He just really couldn't take it.
Did he go to therapy?
No.
Huh, so he just went to the doctor. I mean, I don't know what the procedure is for meds like that. I mean, I know doctors can just prescribe it, but there was no like, oh, we think he should go see somebody about all of his, you know, childhood trauma.
At least have him go see someone for an evaluation.
Yeah, because there might be some other underlining things.
Right. It could have been completely avoided with medicine altogether. You might not have needed medicine.
Yeah.
So I don't. Yeah. So he didn't actually go to therapy. It's later on. Well, it's kind of what we're getting to now. But he was put on the Paxil. With the Paxil, there were some things that happened. So shortly after all of that being on Paxil, his depression did get a little worse. And his episodes had escalated when he threatened suicide in front of his sister grabbing a kitchen knife and said, I would rather die than live in this house with you and dad. And this was a quote from his sister, Danielle.
Oh, wow.
Right. He even ran away, leaving a note behind stating that he wanted to go live with Joe and Joy, his grandparents. His goal was to get to his grandparents' house. Like, that was his destination. He actually made it 15 miles away from his home at 11 years old before being picked up. I ain't going 15 miles, and I'm almost 30 on foot.
And I'm a grown woman, and one, I don't know directions, so yeah. I would have been lost mm-hmm. as soon as I turned off the street.
Well, keep in mind, he's in Florida. His grandparents are in South Carolina.
Oh.
Yeah. So I don't know how he thought he was going to get there, but in his 11-year-old mind, he was going to get there.
I mean, he was determined. He made it 15 miles. He was ready.
He did. He made it farther than I would. So this just shows, like, how much he was longing for, like, that normal life. This is also the time that, this is the weird part. So you mentioned therapy. So when he was put on Paxil and these two events happened, he was put under evaluation in a, like, I don't want to say a hospital and I don't want to say like a mental institution, but he was being evaluated. Okay. They wanted to watch and watch his progress and like monitor it. Well, his dad just up and took him out of this program and sent him to live in Chester, South Carolina with Joe Pittman and Joy Pittman, his paternal grandparents. Like, just took him out of the program, took him off supervision, and just sent him to live with them.
Like, I know that's what he wanted, was to go with his grandparents, but if he didn't receive the help that he needed, it's not going to be an optimal situation for him.
Right. And the thing about it was, is like, they had said that he was showing great progress on Paxil. Like, he was showing improvements. And they took him out. His dad took him out of whatever facility he was in. I don't want to get it wrong. So he was in a facility, but just sent him off to live in South Carolina with his grandparents. Now, that is what he wanted, and that's what you said. But at the same time, he was where he should be in that facility and getting the help that he needed. Yes, his grandparents were where he wanted to be, but that shouldn't have been the call of the dad anymore. That should be in the hands of a doctor after, one, a suicide attempt, and two, running away from home, and just all the trauma buildup. Like, that should be on the call of the doctor at that point that is monitoring and having sessions with him. In my opinion, I'm not a parent.
I completely agree. I feel like there should be, especially, I hit the mic. I'm sorry if you guys heard that. Especially if you had, like, a suicide attempt, there should be, like, I know there's a, what is it, a 48-hour hold? But I think that's for adults. I don't know what it is for kids, because I feel like kids are, their brains are, like, way more underdeveloped. So I feel like there should be some type of minimum, especially if he was making progress. Making progress doesn't mean you're where you need to be. I have kids in my class who are making progress, and they're nowhere near where they need to be, but they're getting better, but, you know.
Exactly. Exactly. And that's what goals are for. Like, you have a goal and you make progress towards the goal.
Yeah.
But anyways, so when he made this move, his grandparents were aware of him being on Paxil at the time, and they wanted to keep that for him. They wanted to try and help him the way that he was being helped in Florida.
Well, kudos to them.
So they took him.
Kudos to them.
Exactly. Oh, his grandparents were superb. Like, they were amazing
people. They sound like lovely people.
And, you know, I want to say something about that. With their ages of 66 and 62, that generation didn't believe, a lot of that generation didn't believe in medicating for mental health issues. Because, you know, when they were growing up, mental health wasn't a thing. You just got over it. Why are you sad? Yep, get over
it. Yep. Yeah, exactly. And for them to be like, look, this is working for my grandson, and kind of like, screw what my generation believes. I want my grandson to be better. So kudos to them. But also, so sorry that you had this unmentionable demise.
I know. So with them being aware that he was on Paxil, they did want to try and keep that, because he was showing positive signs while in Florida on Paxil under that supervision. So they took him to a local doctor, and they found out that Paxil, the drug that he was on, was not available in Chester, South Carolina. Now, I do want to say this drug was available over the state line. Okay, I don't know how far that is from them, but it was available over the state line. Keep that in mind.
But also, why are drugs not available everywhere?
That, yeah, like, that's a good question.
Like, why was it just not available there, but available other places? I feel like this should be, what happens if that's something you need, and that's something you're, body is accustomed to, and then you get there and it's like, well, we don't have this, here's a replacement. And what happens if that drug jacks you all the way up?
Which is what is literally about to happen.
Oh, shucks.
Yeah. So the doctor decided that they're going to give Christopher samples of Zoloft. So I want to do a sidebar here. So although both drugs, if you don't know about Zoloft and Paxil and antidepressants and how it works, they are both drugs that are called selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors, SSRIs. Okay, so both are those drugs. What they do is help produce the serotonin in your body to prevent you from being depressed and low and in your thoughts. That's probably the simplest definition that I could come up with.
I think you did a great job.
Thank you. However, going cold turkey on one and starting a new one is not ever advised by doctors. Most doctors should recommend that one person should slowly come off of one drug. So you start with a whole pill, you go down to half a pill, you go down to a fourth of a pill, and then you, on the fourth of a pill, the next day you would start at a fourth of a pill of the new pill and wean back up. So you wean down and you wean back up.
It's like my friend Mia when she was changing her dog's food. Like, I mean, I know this is totally unrelated, but you can't just switch a dog on food immediately. You have to wean them off their old food, start mixing in the new food so they get adjusted. So eventually the old food is gone, the new food is in. It's like common sense.
Exactly.
Did the doctors not say that they should do this?
No. So when he got there, he had Paxil left. And he also had Paxil in his system. They took him immediately to the doctor to get the medication, obviously. Like, this was within, like, one day of him arriving. So they were on it. Like, they were trying to be productive. So the doctor immediately put him on Zoloft. No in-between time, no weaning him down, no nothing. Just, you're switching today, here's Zoloft.
Well, you were about to lose your job.
Where are you practicing? Because I'm not even a doctor. I have math degrees and I know that that's not smart.
That, and also if the medicine, so say the medicine's not available, was dad not able to purchase the medicine where he was and ship it to him?
Yeah, because if you get a 30-day prescription, that's how prescriptions work. When I get today, you can refill a prescription. Like birth control, for example, you can refill it the week you're on the placebo week. Your insurance will allow you to fill it. So I'm wondering if you can feel, you know, if the dad could have filled the Paxil with five pills left in the bottle that Christopher had, and he could have just called and been like, hey, I have five left. Can you mail me my prescription?
I definitely think it's a thing, because even with the girl's prescription, obviously they don't pick it up because they're not old enough. You just need to have their birthday and their name and their prescription, and they refill it and I go pick it up. So I'm not sure why that wasn't an option as well.
Right. I didn't think about that. That's like, yeah, my mom mailed me my medicine in China.
See?
So there you go. Anyways, it was almost immediate that Christopher allegedly stated or started experiencing negative side effects from Zoloft, like immediately. His sister even described him as manic. She said, and I quote, it was like his mind was moving faster than he could talk. He acted like a crazy man.
Wow.
Yeah. So he.
And the sister was older or younger than him?
She's older.
Okay. I couldn't remember. Sorry.
Yeah.
Allergy brain.
No, you're fine. I didn't say it, but she is older. But I mean, like, you know, I feel like we understand the moving faster than we can talk thing because we have a million things going on. But an 11-year-old, like, eh. And this, I'm about to point out why this side of him was noticeable. So he even reportedly told his Aunt Mindy, I don't like taking them because I feel like my skin is crawling and then I'm just on fire. It's like a fire burning I can't put out, quote.
Oh, that's a horrible feeling. But what did Aunt Mindy do?
She said she found the comment very strange because it shouldn't be doing that to him. So she was very weary of the situation. And, you know, she mentioned it to Joe and Joy as well. And she was like, you know, this is weird. So he was displaying signs of aggression as well. And here's why all of this was weird to everyone around him. Christopher had no prior history or behavior issues in school or out of school. He literally, classmates, teachers, parents, anyone said that he was actually the shyest kid you could come across. Very, very timid. Like, would kind of hide behind you when you introduced yourself, almost timid-like.
So he's one of those kids who, when he probably moved there, and they were like, oh, tell us about yourself, he's probably like, uh-uh.
Mm-mm, not happening. Yeah.
But yeah, I have a few of them.
Yeah, I do too. This was before, you know, the drugs. This is his personality beforehand. No signs of aggression, no signs of anger. He was actually just super timid and super shy. And, you know, that stems back to always feeling abandoned. And so, you know, a lot of shy kids have, you know, that personality trait about them because, well, I was constantly being shipped around. I can't really make friends like this. So what's the point?
Yeah, it's sad that that's what happens. And your body just really gets used to the routine of being like, well, who knows how long I'm going to be here. I'm just here to, like, survive, you know?
Exactly. So Christopher continued to complain of the pain it was causing him. And therefore, the doctor decided that he would prescribe him a pain medication. I don't know what's happening. Like,
where did you get your degree at?
Exactly.
Like, you know that drugs, yeah, you know that drugs have sound effects. And he's telling you, and I feel like I've heard, it might have been another case I was listening to. It sounds familiar. That's a case I was listening to. Someone else was on, like, some type of medication, and they felt the same feelings. Mm-hmm. So, like, as a doctor, why wouldn't you put two and two together? He was on this old drug. I took him off the old drug, cold turkey, which is a do-to-do move.
Yeah.
Put him on this new medication, and almost immediately after he's on his new medication, his behavior is changing, and he feels like he's on fire.
Something's wrong here. Why am I not scratching my chin?
I bet you he was, but he was probably thinking about what he was going to have for dinner.
Clearly. So, again, I just want to note, I am stating for the record that Christopher outwardly spoke about how this medication was affecting him. This is not something that he was keeping to himself. This is not something that people around him did not notice. He complained about these side effects to multiple people, and multiple people even noticed them themselves and saw this change in him. However, when Joe and Joy took Christopher back to the doctor after getting on Zoloft and after the pain medication and told the doctor what was going on, you know what the doctor decided to do?
Just refill it. He's just getting adjusted.
You know what? That would have been the safest thing. But nope, the doctor decided, oh, we're just going to up his dosage. We're going to take him from 100 milligrams to 200 milligrams daily with no easing up on the dose. So just immediately switching the dose to 200 milligrams.
I just need to know what this doctor's Yelp review is, because, child, it is not very good.
Well, just remind me if I'm in South Carolina not to go to this doctor.
Yeah, because, I mean, at this point, if he is still a doctor, I need to find his name and put him in the show notes so none of y'all could go to him, because he's obviously trash.
This is, I mean, I don't even know where you thought that was a good idea. And, you know, some sources said, well, you know, there's some medications out there that you have different side effects on different milligrams. So, like, on 5 milligrams, you may have leg pain, and on 10 milligrams, you may have diarrhea, and on 20 milligrams, you may have. So, that source was trying to pull on the string of the doctor was trying to see if upping the milligrams would change the side effects.
I mean, I understand that aspect of it, but also as a doctor, if you know this child has never presented these things before and now he's presenting it, what is the change? What is the new variable? It's the medication. So why don't we try finding other doctors? I mean, like, I've had not doctors, but I remember when I was, like, shopping around for, like, a new therapist, right? Mm-hmm. And she was like, well, I don't cover your insurance, but here are some other options. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. So if that is the thing, if this drug he wasn't on wasn't available, why didn't you come up with better options for him rather than give him this drug? Now he's on fire all the time. You take him to the doctor and they're like, well, let's just give you some more to put out that fire.
But
no.
This also shows how much trust we instill in doctors, you know, and like,
I don't trust nobody. I don't trust nobody.
This is not by any means Joe and Joy's faults, but you know, they took him to someone they trusted and this doctor is telling them, hey, he needs to be upped on the dosage. And they're like, okay, sounds great. Because Joe and Joy don't have a degree. If a doctor tells me that I have, you know, my big toes falling off, I'm going to trust the doctor because the doctor said so.
And also, you would see if your big toe was falling off, bro.
I mean, so. You would. You would. I was just trying to think of a non-triggering thing.
So and I'm just sorry. Like, your big toe is literally hanging off your foot.
So I'm sorry if losing a big toe triggered anyone out there. Really sorry.
But I don't know. My goodness.
You know, I was trying to make it light.
You know, I saw what you was doing. I just wanted to point out that you would see that big toe dangling.
It would be hanging off. It would be hanging off. But I would trust his opinion. You know, even if I saw my big toe hanging off and he was like, nah, you're good, I'd be like, all right, bet. Cool. You said I was
No, good. You wouldn't, Brooke. Shut up. That toe is dangling. You're a liar. Don't lie to these people.
I'm just trying to get the point across that we trust doctors.
Oh, you're right. You're right. You're right. But not about that dangling toe.
Not about the dangling toe. Exactly. I cannot.
I can't. It's hard to laugh with the allergies. I'm trying. I'm trying.
I tried there.
You did. You did. You get an A for effort.
Thanks. Thanks.
You're welcome.
Thank you. I'm going to dream about toes falling off tonight.
Oh, please don't do that.
Oh, Lord. Wake up in night sweats.
How about toe? Oh, gosh.
Oh, okay.
All right, get us together.
The next two events are allegedly in line with this new added 100 milligrams to Christopher's prescription. And when I say in line, I mean a day later. So, Christopher had, keep in mind, I've already stated that Christopher has no previous history of aggression or, you know, disruptive behavior or fighting or arguments or disrespect, nothing like that. So the next day, Christopher had an argument on the school bus with a much younger kid. He actually ended up choking this younger student on the school bus.
Oh, no. Oh, no. Oh, no, Christopher.
Exactly. Red flag.
Red flag. And also, if you know this boy doesn't have a record, seeing him, like, I wonder what the process, because obviously he had to be suspended or something had to happen. You literally choked a child that is younger than you and probably you could outweigh them.
Right.
So some reprimands had to happen. And they had to have gotten a file from his old school. So, like, what were they doing up in that school?
Mm-hmm. That's one of the questions I want to ask you in the end. And that's kind of where I want your opinion at the very end on a certain, just a certain question. So,
okay.
That evening after the whole bus incident, Joe and Joy took Christopher to an evening service at church, like a Wednesday night service, something like that, where Christopher kept disturbing the person playing the piano in his church by repeatedly kicking the back of the piano's bench, like the back of the where the pianist was playing, the bench. Joe and Joy asked him to stop calmly in the church. He wouldn't stop. He was being defiant. So Joe and Joy left church early to take Christopher home. And 4 hours later, literal hell broke loose.
Is that when he killed him?
So,
oh.
Sources say that people heard when Joe and Joy left the church with Christopher, people heard Joe threatening Christopher with the fact that he's going to send him back to his dad's. Now, remember, he doesn't want to go back to his dad's. He loves his grandparents' place. Like, he doesn't want to go back. and he's angry at this. Other sources say that they knew Joe used spankings and whippings, like not whippings, but like just as like spankings as punishment. So yeah, just things like that are just rumored and are alleged, but I did want to point that out. So that night in 2001, when Christopher was 12 years old, after receiving a whipping or some form of punishment from his grandfather for acting out in church and on the school bus, Christopher went into his grandparents' bedroom in the middle of the night and murdered them with their own shotgun, which he had been taught to use. Christopher shot his grandfather at such close range that it shattered his teeth and one of the bullets lodged in the back of his skull.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
That is really aggressive. Also, this gun wasn't locked up.
No. It's... Yeah, no, I guess not. I mean, clearly not.
All so, right.
After he murdered his grandparents, he set fire to the house by walking around and purposefully setting stacks of paper near open flame candles that would eventually burn down. So meticulous, like thought through. I just want to point that out.
Yeah. Wow. Mm-hmm. That is really, I mean, you said in the beginning he remembered everything, so he obviously knew what he was doing, you know?
Right. Christopher then took his grandparents' car, their guns that were in the house, his dog, and $33 total, and left the home. Police were called to the scene of the fire, where nothing was left by the time they arrived. When the fire was put out, they discovered Joe and Joy in the home, dead. The local community members knew that Christopher was supposed to be there, so the police checked again, and when they realized he wasn't in the home, they assumed he had been taken from the home unwillingly, so a kidnapped situation.
That makes sense. But also, his sister's not living there?
No, she was not sent to live with them.
Oh. I mean, that would make me feel some type of way if I was Christopher. Why you get to stay back there and I gotta go live with me, mom, pop. I mean, granted, he wanted to do that, but
yes,
still.
Yes, he did. So the police set out to search for Christopher. Christopher was actually multiple miles away, and I want to say sources said that it was about like 50 miles away from where his grandparents lived. When his grandparents' car got stuck in a ditch in a wooded area. So I assume, and I'm making an assumption, that Christopher got tired. This murder happened in the middle of the night. He's exhausted. He's 11. He doesn't know how to drive. He pulled over to go to sleep. And then when he tried to get out of the ditch in the morning, it was stuck. That's my assumption. I don't know if that's actually what happened.
That makes sense. I mean, that's a very plausible theory.
Right. So two hunters going into the woods that morning actually spotted Christopher and went to check on him. I mean, this is a kid in the middle of the woods. He told them this crazy story about how a black man had killed his grandparents and kidnapped him and left him here in the woods. They were like, this sounds weird. So they called the police. The police arrived and he told them this same story that he told the hunters. He was like, I was kidnapped. The person killed my grandparents. They set the house on fire and brought me here to the woods.
Why is it always got to be a black person? Why?
You know, and... That's, I'm actually going to get to that too. There's a theory that he had underlying racism in his family and didn't realize it. Like, you know, like he's 11. So he's just kind of repeating what he's heard.
Yeah.
And I guess what he's heard is a stereotype that crimes are committed by black men. And so when he had to make up a story, he was like, oh, a black man did it, you know.
That's a shame.
It is. But he stuck to this. This is where it gets a little, when the trial comes about, this is where it gets a little eh. Because he stuck to this story even when he was taken back to town with police for an interview. He kept this story up. When he finally did confess after a little while at the police station with police asking him questions, he proclaimed that, and I quote, his grandparents deserved what they got.
Oh no, baby.
This is damning evidence in court later. This statement was. So it's also to be noted that sources say
He was stone cold in every interview, no emotions. Even the Hunter said that he might as well have been talking about the weather with the tone that he had. Now, that is a side effect. Not a side effect, but that is a action that antidepressants do. When I take my antidepressant, you can have a conversation about Justin Bieber walking in my house and surprising me with a concert, and I would be like, great, sounds good. And it's not that I'm not feeling anything. It's just that I'm numb. So you have to keep in mind the amount of medication he had in his system. Is this a side effect? Is this what's causing this just numbness of these reactions? Like, I was kidnapped. My grandparents were murdered.
I mean, I could understand that, but to say that they deserved it.
Exactly.
Like, I could get you being like a robot because you're on all these meds that you should have been weaned off and weaned on properly, but that's not an excuse for you saying like they deserved what they got.
100% agree with you, because they didn't. They did everything for this kid. So he later told police that he was under the influence of an overdose of Zoloft, his antidepressant. Christopher claimed that it was the Zoloft that caused him, quote, command hallucinations. A voice was telling him to murder his grandparents. He got up out of bed, and it was like he was in a dream or a TV show that he was watching but couldn't control.
So were you still in this dream when you said they deserved what they got or no?
That's where you know, his defense comes in. They're like, well, yeah. But then the prosecutor's like, well, no. So let's talk about this drug for a second. I just want to really hone in on this drug. So Zoloft has been linked, studied to several side effects, including aggravated depression, amnesia, abnormal dreams, paranoid reactions, hallucinations, aggressive behavior, and delusions. And if one does overdose on the medication, it could lead to manic reactions.
Okay, that's a lot. I feel like all drugs have, you know, when you hear a commercial, and they're like, side effects can cause blah, 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 blah. But, like, the possibility that that happens,
yeah,
I feel like it's not that great. But that could have been the case with Christopher. It could have been the case with him. We will never know. I mean, I'm just still stuck on they deserved it.
And as
like,
you should
be. Like, where's your remorse?
Exactly, as you should be. But then would he have remorse with all of this in his system? Or would that even be there? Would he be able to display
Did he eventually
it?
Show remorse for them,
yes.
Or no? Okay, all right, all right.
For 2 days leading up to the murders, Christopher might have been suffering from a dose that was too high, and this could have been in correlation to the Paxil withdrawal and the Zoloft increase. So he was going through withdrawals at the same time of having an increase of medication.
Yikes. I hope this doctor went on trial, too, because you know, this is all his fault.
I looked, and I don't even think that the doctor was indicted.
That is a shame.
I agree.
That is a shame. I feel like we wouldn't even be here, sitting here talking about this case, if the doctor would have done what he was supposed to do.
Exactly. Yeah.
And now he's just off, probably still prescribing people the wrong crap.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And Christopher, I mean, I don't know where he's at. I'm assuming he's in jail or something. But wow, that's not fair.
It's not. And, you know, Christopher continued to struggle even within the system awaiting trial. So he shifted from facility to facility for the next 3 years while he waited trial. And he was suffering from mania. That's how they, like, classified him. Again, this is where that underlying racism comes back into play, because a psychiatrist claims that he made several racial slurs during a manic episode to a prison guard very early into his imprisonment while coming off of the drugs. So, this could have been a direct fact that Christopher was just a crap person, and I am stating that for the record. We could be talking about just an absolute crap bag. You know, that could be the case. You know, I'm not ruling that out, but I'm also not going to take away that he was suffering in some type of way mentally.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. He was suffering mentally, and the doctor did him a disservice. Mm-hmm.
And he also had crap parents that he probably learned a lot of that behavior from.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of this is learned behavior, even with the racial slurs and the stereotypes. It's all learned behavior. And if he had better parents and if he went to a better doctor, things would have been drastically different for him, I think.
Mm-hmm. So on Monday, January 31st, 2005, 3 years later, at the age of 15, so he committed the murders at 12. He is now on trial at 15. He was tried as an adult, and that is
I guess because of the nature of the crimes, that's why, right?
Yeah, well, that's where a lot of people disagreed. They did not disagree that he should be held accountable. They thought he should be punished. But you tried a 12-year-old at the time of the murders who was suffering from mental issues as an adult. So a lot of people had issues with that alone.
Yeah, because even in the Tia Wimberly case, I mean, she didn't get first degree.
Right. She got manslaughter.
Yeah. It was either manslaughter or second degree, one of the two. But they took her stuff into consideration. Right. So why is it different here? I wonder if it's because of the state they were in.
It is. That is what it is. So
bam.
The prosecutor wanted to go for the worst of the worst. And the prosecutor would have gone for the death penalty if the death penalty was allowed in South Carolina. Like, he wanted to take this kid's life.
That's OD. That's OD.
Yeah.
I definitely agree. He did need to be punished for his crime, but to kill him, he was 12 and he had all these mental, I don't want to say mental. Is it mental?
Trauma.
Yeah. Yeah, he had all this trauma from his childhood. He's depressed because of it. He's on medication trying to get himself together. He was doing well when he was in a facility, and his dad was like, well, we just gonna take you out. So he kind of had the cards stacked against him, and that sucks for him.
It does. Everything was against him, like you said. Even the prosecutor was against him. Even the court system was against him. So the defense went into the courtroom with the defense ready to go that it was the medication that made these events come to life. To be exact, they argue that Christopher ingesting the prescribed Zoloft caused him to become involuntary intoxicated on the drug. And what that means is involuntary intoxication would diminish criminal responsibility on the basis that the defendant, yes, intoxicated, but not by their own choice or consent. That this person is not at fault for the crimes committed while they are intoxicated. So, like, that's what they were trying to push. We are not saying Christopher didn't do this. He did it. But he was involuntarily intoxicated by these drugs.
Yes. Which is why the doctor needed to go to jail.
I agree. Which is true. Because what kid can say, I'm not going to take that, when a doctor and your guardians are saying, oh, here's your medicine, babe. Here you go. That is involuntary. Like, it is. And I mean, I know that kids put their trust in us as adults to make sure we're giving them the correct things. And Joe and Doy are not at fault. They didn't know. They trusted a doctor. But that is still involuntary intoxication.
Yeah, it definitely is. I completely agree.
So
the only person at fault here, again, is the doctor.
The doctor. So the prosecutor said that they didn't think the Zoloft defense was viable. And they said, quote, I really think that it was a smokescreen, prosecutor John Meters said later. He said, he just happened to be on an antidepressant when this happened. Even Pfizer Incorporated, the manufacturer of Zoloft, said in a statement after the verdict was given, quote, Zoloft didn't cause his problems, nor did the medication drive him to commit murder. On these two points, both Pfizer and the jury agree.
Here's the thing. If the medication was prescribed in the way that it was supposed to, it wouldn't have caused the murder, but it wasn't. This boy was literally intoxicated on Zoloft.
Mm-hmm. An overdose of it.
He had entirely too much in his body, and the way that his body processed it was how it played out.
Mm-hmm.
And shame on them for not taking responsibility, because why don't you go pop all more dosage of your pill and see how you react. See how it affects your body.
Even as an adult. Go take three and see what you do.
Exactly.
You know.
Ridiculous.
So let's switch cases here. And let's focus on like what this trial did when it comes to antidepressants in kids. So that April, so we just had trial in January. That April, A Santa Cruz, California man beat his friend and was acquitted by a jury of attempted murder after he blamed the episode, the manic episode, on Zoloft. Okay, so one grown man beat his friend and was acquitted for attempted murder because the defense used that Zoloft was the main source there. Like, was the...
And where was this?
This was in California.
Huh.
Yes. But in at least two other cases that last year, jurors in Michigan and in North Dakota rejected similar claims. So one parent, so they went to court. Zoloft went to court and opened up a court case. And all these parents of children came to this court case to say what happened to their kids once their kids got on Zoloft. Or adults, even adults came. One parent that showed up was the parent of the Columbine, Colorado school killers.
No!
Yes. Who unsuccessfully sued the makers of a popular antidepressant medication, Paxil. Remember that one?
Arguing, oh, the one he was on.
Yep. Arguing that it was, at least in part, responsible for the homicidal acts of their son in the Columbine murder.
Wow.
So this is just a few other cases where the defense and the scenario has played out in court. This was not a new thing amongst the defense of, like, seeing these drugs have effects on people and have manic episodes. So
also, why are some cases, like, some states like, yeah, this is the reason, and other states are like, no.
Jury. That's what a jury is, unfortunately.
But, I mean, I get that, but it's just, like, you have someone in California who, he didn't kill his friend, he just beat him up. Mm-hmm. And they're like, oh, it's because he was on the wrong meds.
Right.
And then you have Christopher, who is freaking 11, and again, is trusting his guardian, is trusting his doctor, taking these pills. Mm-hmm. And they're like, yeah, it's not going to stick. We're going to find something else.
Yeah, it's not going to stick. We're going to try you as an adult.
Like, that's... And not only were we going to charge you as an adult, if the death penalty was on the table, you would have gotten it.
Yeah, exactly.
That's crazy.
So Zoloft, like several other antidepressant medications, has never been specifically approved for children. So keep that in mind. Zoloft has never been approved to use on children. Prozac has been approved for treating depression in children. So did you know that once the FDA approves a drug, that it can then be used for any purpose in any population?
I did not know that, and I don't really agree, especially if it's not made for children. Why would
right.
you give
so
it
drugs
to
made
a child?
For, right. So drugs made for an adult, once they're approved by FDA, they can be used on children.
I mean, I do know, like, for example, Flonase. There's no kid version of Flonase, but they do decrease, like, so I get two squirts in my nose and the girls get one. Mm-hmm. And then they also can't be on it for longer than 2 months because it affects them. They're like, oh, you can't use this for more than 2 months. Mm. So it's just like you put this stuff in my children's body and they can only, what happens if their allergies go for more than 2 months? Now what do we do? Suffer? Mm-hmm.
Right. Yep. So I'm with you. This is very messed up because that means that a child age 1 to 17 who make up 7% of the total U.S. population taking prescribed antidepressants are ingesting psychoactive medications. Those that are these are medicines that directly affect the brain's functioning. That's what a psychoactive medication is. That have not been clinically tested for efficacy and safety in children. Like,
and they're so young, like I said earlier, their brains are literally undeveloped. So imagine what effect these drugs can have on their mental as they're still developing and growing their brains.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Wow.
So let's back up even further. In 1997, federal law, the FDA Modernization Act, attempted to encourage that drugs be tested for children in particular. Like, so separate the testing, adults and children, so that you would know. But it turned out that they have loopholes that meant it didn't have to serve its purpose effectively. So they found a loophole around this act. So the act said you're going to test children and adults separately to know what to label this as, but they found a loophole. In an attempt to remedy this problem, a 2002 federal law, the Best Pharmaceuticals for Children Act, gave the FDA the authority to order post-approved testing for children of drugs widely used in children. However, the FDA has yet to demand that the very antidepressants and stimulants that are used in children today be subjected to post-approval testing. Meaning, they've said, hey, you need to do this, but we haven't asked you to do it yet. That's literally what I just said. If I lost you on that, they passed this law, said, hey, you need to run these tests on children, but we'll let you know when you need to do it. And they still haven't asked these companies to do that.
Well, shame on them for that. And then also, with that, like, adults can give consent. So if you're trying this on kids.
And that's what I'm about to get at. Yes.
Okay. Because that was what I was thinking the whole time. Like, my kid, like, that's me consenting for my kid. Who knows if my kid really wants to try this?
Mm-hmm. So, of course, testing on children, that's literally, you read my mind. So, children, of course, testing on children brings about its own issues, both legally and ethically. Could parents really offer their children up for drug testing without child's consent? And could their children sue them at a later time in their life if they suffered adverse effects from those clinical trials? Maybe they could test if both parents and a parent and child gave permission. So all of this is very gray. How can you test on children? How can you do it both legally and ethically?
Yeah. Yeah. That was what I was thinking while you were explaining the thing that you lost me, but then you explained it because, child, I was lost. I'm not your girlfriend.
It's a lot of big words that I didn't know either. Yeah. So I had to look a lot of that up too, because I was like, wait, you're asking for post-testing and now you don't. It was a lot. So I'm trying to explain it in like simpler terms.
And then also, this is way back when. Why haven't we like closed this loophole?
Right. I mean, like, what's happening? We just put it on somebody's desk and forgot about it?
Like, no.
Mm-hmm. Mm-mm.
Someone's not doing their job. Again.
Yep. So people vary on these procedures. What I just mentioned, like all the ethical and legal procedures on how to actually go about testing children for these drugs, people vary on what is right and what is wrong. But one thing is clear, the current situation that we're in which children take drugs tested only on adults that may pose unacceptable dangers to them. So we agree that this is not right. And like something does need to happen in the pharmaceutical world. How do you do it? We don't know. But there does need to be a clear testing on adults and children, because what you said, Ashley, and we're not even doctors, the brain just alone is different between Skylar and you and me and my eighth graders. Like, you know, it's just different.
Yeah, it is different. It's not the same thought process. You don't have the, I don't want to say common sense, but you don't have like, some people don't have the common sense yet. Some people don't have their like moral code yet. It's just it's a gray area. It is essentially, and like what's right and what's not right. Like, are we going to test these kids without their consent and risk being sued later, or are we just going to be like, you know what, this works for adults, so let's just cut it in half and give it to a kid?
Exactly, and that's what we do essentially. But I know that what I said was a lot right there. I just wanted y'all to have a background on these antidepressants, where they've been used in other cases, and what the FDA and certain laws have tried to do in the past. But now I want to get back to Christopher. So on February 15th, 2005, Christopher was convicted of murder and sentenced to 30 years for each count of murder in prison after jurors rejected the claim that an antidepressant clouded his judgment. Okay, so that means 60 years. That means he's 15 years old and he's going to be in jail for 60 years. It's his entire life.
Wow.
Yeah.
And is he like, he's in jail. Is he being medicated in jail?
Don't know. So even though in 2004, so he was convicted in 2005, even though in 2004, a year before his conviction, the FDA heard testimony from members of the public, what I mentioned earlier, the drug industry, and the medical profession regarding the use of Zoloft in children. So a year before Christopher got convicted, Zoloft heard all these testimonies and they went to court for it. went to court for it. Even Christopher's dad was there. One of those parents I just said was Christopher's dad. And this whole court thing with Zoloft urged the makers to put a so-called black box warning on the packages. That's all they did. Slap on the wrist, put a black box warning on the package, advising doctors and parents to look for signs of aggression and anxiety in children and teens taking these medications. So a lot of the people that testified, although some did say that, you know, their child did have manic episodes, a lot of parents testified that after being on Zoloft, it wasn't that they harmed anyone else, but that they did commit suicide. So the amount of parents that showed up to this testimony and said that Zoloft was the contributing factor of their child losing their life was a main play in that case.
That's really scary.
It is. It's terrifying.
God forbid that my kids have to go on meds. Now I'm going to think even more about it because mm-hmm. It's like, yikes, I don't want that for my kid. I don't want them to really think that they have to end it all to be okay. Like,
exactly.
I don't want that for them.
No, absolutely yikes. Not. And that's terrifying as a parent.
Yeah. Everything's terrifying as a parent.
Yes, I'm sure it is.
Yeah.
So, however, in trial, jurors decided that his sense of right and wrong had actually not been compromised by the drug Zoloft. After hearing about this case with all these witnesses, all these parents saying all these things, the jurors said, no, he wasn't. This didn't faze him for right and wrong. Circuit Court Judge Danny Piper ordered the sentences to run concurrently. This was the minimum penalty that he could get. So that's what I was getting at with they wanted the death penalty because they slapped him with the hardest penalty that they could. Like, they wanted to try him as an adult, and then they gave him 30 years for both, you know, his grandfather and his grandmother. But the judge was like, okay, well, the minimum that I can do. So the prosecutor was pushing for the max of everything. Max, 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 max. The judge was like, well, the minimum that I can give you is that they run concurrently. Like, he kind of thought he was helping, I guess. I don't know.
Regardless, I want to know what the makeup of this jury was. I just have so many questions. How do you not see all this evidence that's laid in front of you? You're just like, well, that worked for those, but not for this one. Like, well, what are you using him as an example?
The trial had a lot of things wrong with it, this being one of them. So there was some controversy about the verdict. Two of the jurors admitted feeling coerced into their decision, and another juror openly discussed the trial with his wife and a bartender during deliberations.
That's literally what you're not supposed to do.
It's what you're told not to do.
And yeah. You're just in a bar? And you don't know who those people are going to run their mouth to.
Exactly. One juror said that, quote, if Christopher Pittman had been 25, we would have come to a decision much earlier. Because of his age, it was very, very difficult, said juror foreman Arnold Height, but made sure to say that he was only speaking for himself. So, you know, he said that had Christopher been an adult, we would have deliberated 3 hours. You are guilty. We're out of here. But because of his age, they kind of went back and forth. Christopher's attorney Andy Vickers said, we're devastated, we're heartbroken, we're mystified that the state chooses to treat a 12-year-old as an adult. Another juror said, it bothered me a lot, it was not an easy decision, but everyone kept saying, look at the evidence, look at the evidence. I'm sure many of us had sleepless nights, said jury Christine Peterson, 54, the grandmother of a 12-year-old herself.
Oh.
Could you imagine being the juror on that case with a 12-year-old yourself as a grandparent?
I would just have to picture if it was my grandkid, what would I do?
Exactly.
At the end of the day, right is right, wrong is wrong.
You're right.
However, comma, what he did was wrong.
Yes.
But again, all of the things that prior to that were also wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Agree. And if they were done correctly...
Yeah, we wouldn't even be talking.
Have to make that decision for him.
I know. So, however, South Carolina as a state, and this is kind of what you were asking earlier, like, did all of these things come about because of the state we were in? Yes. South Carolina as a state sets no minimum age for trying defendants as an adult, meaning kids could literally commit murder at 5 and they'd be like, trying you in as an adult. There's no minimum age in South Carolina. Disagree with that. That's not okay.
Yeah. And why is it okay in some... I mean, I get it. We're a democracy and states get to choose their things. But some things just need to be across the board. Mm-hmm. And that's one of them. There's no way, like, if a five-year-old killed somebody that they're going to get life in prison. Like, that doesn't make any sense.
No, it doesn't. Not at all. And it shouldn't. It shouldn't.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. Christopher's defense tried unsuccessfully last year to get his case heard in family court. So if Christopher had been convicted in family court, which was an option, and I want to state that. So the prosecutor had an option of going to family court or trying it like as an adult, which is what he chose. If he had chose family court, he would have only been in custody until he turned 21 years old, and then he would have been released. That's 12 to 21 in jail. That is, to me, if you're actually being reformed in prison, that's a sentence that I could agree with right there. I really could get behind that.
Yeah, because that's the whole point of being in prison, is to get reformed and to get better so you can go back into society. Wow. Society. And now we're saying this boy's going to get out, what, he was 12, 60 years. He's going to get out 70-something.
72 years old.
And he's not even going to know. Who knows what help he's getting in there? And then when he gets out, is he really prepared to be out?
Do you realize he got locked up 2 months after 9/11? That's the last memory he has of being free.
And now look at the world. Like, geez. Like, it's going to be like a shock.
Yeah.
Ugh.
So my question is this. Do you think, and we kind of answered this, but like, one of my questions is, do you think we need to rethink our eagerness to try adults in general, more particularly in cases like this? Should kids going on trial be a case-by-case matter? Or should, like you said, kids under X age should be in family court? If kids are above X age, we can take it case-by-case.
I feel like a case-by-case is... I think it depends on the crime that they committed. Mm-hmm. And everything. With this story, I think that his sentence was very hard, and I don't think that's a sentence that he should have received with everything that you've presented today. I just don't think that was correct. However, if Christopher wasn't on meds and he was aggressive and he had a history and things of that nature, then I could lean with, okay, like, you clearly thought this out. You clearly did what you did. So there you go.
Right. Like Jasmine.
Like Jasmine. Absolutely.
She,
like,
plotted it. She planned it. She plotted it. She felt no remorse. I didn't agree with her sentence. Christopher did this on straight impulse that he claimed he was hearing voices. He was on an overdose of medication that he probably shouldn't even have been taken if he had been in therapy the way that, you know, we keep talking about. This was not plotted. This was not premeditated. This was, he woke up in the middle of the night and just did it.
And he literally told his dad, like, I want to go live with them. Like, they're literally my only stable people. Why would you kill that?
Exactly.
Why would you end their lives if those were your people?
And that's what tugs me at this case, because of everything, all the evidence that he loved his grandparents, like, did not want to go back and live with his father, like, wanted to be with his grandparents. Like, why would he, in sound mind, kill them? So that's, I don't know. I got just a few more things I want to tell you guys. So in October 5th, 2006, the South Carolina Supreme Court heard oral arguments on his appeal. So this is his first appeal. A petition to pardon Christopher was also presented at that time. Christopher's father, Joe, yes, his grandfather's name was Joe. He was Joe Sr. His father's name is Joe Jr. If I wasn't clear about that, I'm sorry. Told the judge that he supports his son, even though the victims were his own parents. He also called on Governor Mark Sanford and President Bush at the time to pardon his son. He went on to say that, I love my son with all my heart, as I did my mom and dad, he said. And mom and dad, if they were here today, they would be begging for mercy as well. The justices were also asked to hold off on moving Christopher to the adult penitentiary, but the delay was denied. So he did actually go in from the youth facility to adult penitentiary. On June 11th, 2007, the court affirmed Christopher's conviction via vote of 4-1. So he would remain in prison. They did not vote him out. Recently, Christopher's older sister, Danielle, married a U.S. Marine and gave birth to a baby girl named after her grandmother, Joy.
Oh, that's precious.
Yes, I know. I thought that was very sweet. She once showed her support on Christopher for Christopher on NBC's Today Show, saying that her brother is not guilty and the family will keep fighting for his release. She said, quote, "I think everybody failed him in some way or another. I mean, you can't go through life and not fail somebody in a certain way. We're going to fight for him, and if I have to keep fighting for the next 29 years to get him out, he's not going to stay in there full time, that the full time that he's supposed to." So his family is still very much behind him. His maternal grandmother is behind him. His sister, her husband, and his father are still very much behind him and supporting him. But Christopher does remain in South Carolina adult prison, and his Florida family still visits when finances and time allows. He appealed again on April 14th, 2008, but the court declined to hear his appeal to reduce his 30-year sentence. So they declined it again.
What is wrong with these people?
Mm-hmm.
Like, what is wrong with these people?
I know. So what has come from this is the government did order warnings on both antidepressants, Paxil and Zoloft, as well as others, because of the possibility that they can cause children to consider suicide and have manic episodes. So there are not many positives in this case, but one thing was that they are doing black box labels now. They do give warnings to parents when they give these to kids, although I don't know how I feel about giving them to kids with no evidence of trials on kids, but that's my opinion. So thus, all in all, let's wrap it up. In my opinion, this was an incident on both our medical system and our legal system. Our medical system let this 12-year-old boy down when they allowed a doctor to legally prescribe him a drug that may well have caused him to have hallucinations and delusions. Who are we to say that that's not true? As doctors, we trust them with our kids' lives, and you would think that after reporting all of these side effects, they would have tried a different method of treating Christopher other than drugs. The legal system let him down by treating him as what he clearly was not, and that it was an adult. Those are my opinions, but I want to bring it back to the classroom. And Ashley, here's my biggest question. As educators, we know the kids that are allergic to certain things, peanuts, bees, things like that. We also know what kids need an EpiPen, what kids have seizures. That is to the extent of our knowledge as teachers. Do you think, as educators that spend majority of our time with other people's children, that we should know when a child gets on a new medication from the parent or guardian? Hey, Tommy got on this new medication. Can you please look out for signs? Because the parent can't be with that child during that window of school to monitor and report these findings to doctors. So where do we stand as teachers with this? Where does our authority lie, or our intel? Like, what should we know?
I thought that this was a thing already. Like, I know I just signed the girls up for kindergarten, and I have to disclose all the medications and stuff that they are on. So I figured that this was just common for at least the nurse to notify the teachers.
That's what you just said. The nurse. So our nurse knows every medication that the kids are on if it's reported on their form. The nurse does not disclose any of that to us. Like, I can pull up my records and I can see that Tommy is ADHD, but that's all it says. I don't know if Tommy is on medication. I can see that Sally has seizures, but I don't know if Sally started a new medicine to look out for seizures as a side effect. I can see that Jimmy has, what was the other one I said? Allergies. But I don't know if Jimmy carries an EpiPen. I don't have an EpiPen on me. Like, I don't, and I'm only speaking for myself in the classroom. There probably are districts that do it different. I just do not know what my kids take or are on.
I would say mainly with my students with IEPs, I know that they are on drugs, and I don't want to say on drugs like that, but yeah. You know what I mean? They're on medication for their diagnosis on their IEPs. But what about, like you said, what about those kids who don't have them? I mean, and then the nurse has it. She doesn't have to disclose to us. But I feel like, how many times does that kid really see the nurse versus how much they see us? I feel like we need to be equally as involved so we could report. And some parents are great. They're like, they'll email us and let us know, hey, so-and-so's on a new medication. If you see any side effects, let me know and I can talk to the doctor. But not all parents are like that. Some like to keep their information private. But I don't understand that when my job is literally to help your child.
And it's literally what I get paid for. Opposite of that, I've had a handful of parents email me and say, you know, Jimmy, we are out of his medicine. We're going to try to go get it filled at the beginning of the month. He's going to be a little crazy for the next 2 weeks, like letting me know. But like, you know, if Christopher had never had record in school, now granted, he literally got uprooted from Florida and put into South Carolina. These teachers don't know him from Adam. Like, he just got to their school. So they could not have been at fault. They did not know him well enough to see these signs. But for teachers that are established with their kids, and a kid goes from, I mean, I'm thinking of my kid that never talks, and all of a sudden he's having outbursts, I feel like I kind of need to know why, and I need to know who to report that to.
I agree, but going back on the new school, I feel like almost at a new school, I feel like schools, if you're at a brand new school, I feel like I'm going to be more hyper-vigilant. You know what I mean? Granted, I don't know this kid, but if I see them reacting in a way that alarms me, I'm not just going to be like, you know what I mean? Like, I'm going to make note of it. I'm going to talk to people. Maybe I'll reach out to the school counselor and be like, hey, is this normal behavior for him? I looked at his file, but it doesn't say anything about this.
Yeah.
I wouldn't just put it to the wayside. You know what I mean?
I know. And that's kind of like where I wanted to like see how much should we know or how much should be disclosed to us. And, you know, obviously at the end of the day, parents and the guardians have the final say. And if they don't want people to know, then they don't have to tell us. But we can't help if we don't know.
Yeah, that's what I say to my students all the time. Closed mouths don't get fed. I don't know what you need if you don't tell me. And now is the time where we have to start advocating for ourselves and advocating for our learners. And parents need to start advocating for their kids. Because at the end of the day, we spend hours with your child every single day. Sometimes they accidentally call us mom and dad. Yeah. Like, it happens all the time. You know, they see us as this figure who is there to help them. So let us help them.
And that's so true. Like, we're with them. I can't even do the math right now. But we're with them, what, 8 hours a day, 5 days a week?
Sure.
Sounds great. That's a lot of hours.
Yeah, sounds. It's a lot.
A lot of hours.
It's more time than I see my own children. You know what I mean?
So that's all that I have as far as Christopher Pittman goes and just like what happened. Again, you might have heard me say all of that and you're like, stop advocating for him. He killed somebody. He should be in jail. And your opinion is valid. I just had a hard time with this case because someone who did take Zoloft in high school and immediately had side effects as well and told my parents, I got to get off this crap. This is doing something to me. And they took my word for it and I got off. And I finally have found a medication that works for me. Mental illness can be treated through medication, and I'm not taking away from that. I take medicine for it, but it is a journey. And anyone that is struggling with mental illness and use medication to help knows that. They know that it takes a while to find that medicine that works for their body, for their brain, for their activities. And as a child, Christopher couldn't know that. He couldn't know that the way that you and I know that as adults. All in all, that's why I struggled with this case. I know what it's like to feel some type of way on a medicine that you didn't ask for, but you know that you need. What he did was wrong. Did he deserve punishment? Yes. Do I agree that he should have been tried as an adult? No. But is that in my opinion? Absolutely. I'm just here to bring you the facts. If I lost you on some of the FDA stuff, I highly encourage y'all to go look it up. It's very interesting to know how the FDA works and how it involves children and adult trials. Good luck. It's a doozy. But I think they're getting tired.
Yeah, I'm getting tired. It's 11:15. I mean, it's 10:15 where you at.
It's 10:15, but my BF already asleep. The dog's asleep. Everybody asleep.
But you about to go to sleep because we about to go because the bell don't dismiss you. We do.
So. And we haven't said goodbye yet, but we can. So bye.
Bye.